Welcome to today's New Life Live podcast. Today's podcast is brought to you by you. Your donations make this podcast possible. Please consider donating today using the New Life app, visit newlife.com, or call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Welcome to New Life Live with host and founder of New Life Ministries, Stephen Arterburn. New Life Live is dedicated to transforming lives one at a time, thanks to the giving hearts of you, our listeners. Our goal is to provide you with wisdom from God's Word to give you hope and help in life's hardest places. If you have a question you'd like to ask today, our phone lines are open. Call 1-800-229-3000. That number again is 1-800-229-3000. Now here's Steve.
Hi there. Welcome to New Life Live. Here it is. We're in May, May 5th, Cinco de Mayo. Now, this is not the day for green beer. That was St. Patrick's Day. And I hope that you'll restrain yourself if you're celebrating Cinco de Mayo. Guess what else it is? Well-timed, it's the National Day of Prayer. They both fall on the first Thursday of May. And, well, actually, Cinco de Mayo may not. But anyway, the first Thursday in May is National Day of Prayer Day. And people from all over are invited to pray. It was created in 1952 by President Harry S. Truman. And every president since has signed a National Day of Prayer proclamation. And boy, does this country, this world, ever need prayer. It's not exclusively a Christian event. But it is the day to turn to God, to pray, and ask for help. So I'm going to do that right now. I'm going to pray, and Lord, I'm going to ask you to be with those in government, those that are in the military that are protecting this nation, those that are broadcasting, and those in business and education, those that head up the church, and I pray for every family that your wisdom will prevail. Your truth will rule. We pray this in the name of your Son, Jesus. Amen. National Day of Prayer. And I hope and pray that you'll join all of us and continue to pray today. Now, this being May, we have a brand new devotional. It's called 100 Days of Freedom from Anger. And I believe anger is the most prominent, the most obvious symptom of unresolved issues of the past. Why are you so angry? You think, well, somebody did something to me. No, that was the trigger that tapped in to that stew that's down there causing you to stew. So if you want a blessing, gift of any amount, I'm going to send you 100 days to freedom from anger. Also, this Saturday, we're doing Transforming Grief, and it's a double entendre of not only do we help transform the grief, but when you go through the grieving process, you can be transformed. It can dredge out the depths of your character to go through the grieving process and free you from that severe pain that comes when we first experience loss, and that's what we want for you. You can find out about that at newlife.com, 1-800-NEW-LIFE also. Jackie, you look like you're about to say something. Do you want to say something?
Mm-hmm. Nope, I'm just listening.
Lots of good things. I'm really excited about this grief workshop, Steve, that you're doing, because I think as we hear people and so many deep wounds and hurts, grief is such a huge part of it. And as we're going through things, we protest, not wanting to lean into our pain, and grief and learning how to grieve helps us to lean into that pain so that we can move through it and have some freedom.
And we want to be transformed, but that's going to require leaning into that pain. Mm-hmm. And that might seem counterintuitive for people.
Right. And, you know, it's not just for losing a loved one. That's one of the problems. We lose freedom, we lose hope, we lose the dream, so many other things that need to be grieved so that we can be free. The grieving process, you know, it just helps us to accept the past we cannot change. Live in the present and embrace it. And then we're able to actually enjoy life, not tied to something in the past. 1-800-229-3000. We'll be back with phone calls.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
We are back. Steve Arterburn here with Dr. Jackie Mack Harris, Dr. Jill Hubbard. The doctors are in, and Steve right here is with us from Santa Barbara, listening on that station there. We've been around them a long time, KDAR. Steve here, how are you today, and how could we help?
I am well. It's good to hear all you guys. Jumping right to it, I got a question. I've got a 28-year-old son, product of divorce, and that occurred during the ages of 13 to 17, and rejected by his mom when she moved out to a different house. So looking at child neglect, and counselors have talked to him and talked to me about childhood neglect and the ramifications of that and how to deal with that.
Right.
So my question has to do with how best do I deal with my son feeling neglected as a child in light of me thinking that I've done as much as I can do, and with supporting with housing and schooling, college and therapy. And yet there's an expectation that I'm going to continue to do these, to support his lifestyle and his behavior without me seeing any change in anything that he's been doing. So how do I deal with the childhood neglect? What's the best things that I can do without enabling behavior?
Yeah, you know, the worst thing is to make him feel like he can depend on you forever for everything, versus you giving him the feeling that he is competent and you are confident that he can make it without your support. Now, an unhealthy thing to do is to come in one day and out of the clear blue say, I can't support you anymore. What's really good is to have a 5-year plan. And you might think, well, that's a long time, but that sounds very loving. So, son, here's what we're going to do. I calculate that I'm doing this, supporting you in this way. Here's what the numbers look like. Now, here's what I'm going to do next year. It looks exactly like that. But in the third year, here's what happens, the fourth and the fifth. And that way you know what's coming. And you tell him, because the worst thing I could do for you is to have you dependent on me and my finances. You can do this, and I'm going to help you. Jill, Jackie Mack, what are you thinking?
Oh, I'm thinking you also have to decide what can you tolerate. Sometimes when we have young adult children and we're assisting them, because we can't tolerate the idea of them going without. Right? My daughter wrecks her car. I'm going to help her get another car. I don't want to co-sign for another car. I want her to be able to pay for her car, but I don't like the idea of her not being able to get a car that is safe. And right, so there's all the things that I'm then thinking about. She could go get a beater. She could go to an auction. She could go get something she could afford, but I might feel like she needs to have more. So I'm curious of how much of what might be deemed enabling you're doing because of your own needs to feel like you're not neglecting your child, who is now an adult.
Exactly. And that's, so that goes kind of back to Steve's 5-year plan. As I've been doing this, he came and moved in with me at 17, lived with me for a couple of years, and I was working to get him out on his own. And he's stable in what he does. He's self-supporting. But then he's living at a low income level, complaining about never having enough money. And when I talked to him about other jobs that he could do and how he could actually help step up his level of living, that's rejected. And I need to just step up and help him do those things. And then having doctor bills or dental bills and I gave him money to take care of that, and it went someplace else, and that amount was left on my account. And when I talked to him about it and said, you need to get this paid off or do something, talk to them and work out a deal, he said, no, it's your account. It's your responsibility.
Wow, so he's kind of entitled, isn't he?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a very different attitude than someone says, oh, Dad, I know I let you down. Okay, I'm going to pay you back.
Right.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
That's a defiant
attitude. So you are
attitude.
Doing him a disservice.
Yeah,
and
defiant
perhaps,
and entitled.
Yeah, perhaps the guilt of him not having, you know, being rejected by his mom, all those things like Jackie was talking about that go in, as well as our need to have them live at a certain standard, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And so I think, like Steve, you were talking about the five-year plan. It's like maybe one thing at a time, mm-hmm. you start incrementally handing things back to them
yeah.
and saying no to some of the extras and letting them sit with that. And they will get mad.
Mm-hmm.
Because hearing no when they haven't heard a lot of no's or they've been able to finagle their way, is hard for them.
Yeah, well, and they, sometimes they'll say things like, I didn't choose to be here.
Yeah.
Okay, well, you're here now, though. And it is important for us to help them adult. And it is, things are hard. Things are hard financially. There's a lot of emotional pain that he's probably dealing with. So his struggle is real, but it's his struggle. And as an adult, mm-hmm. he's got to start taking some responsibility for those struggles on his own. And I love Steve's five-year plan as well. That's how we've done it with our kids. Okay, so this year, this is the last year I'm going to cover this for you. This is the last year I'm going to cover that for you. Last night, me and my daughters came up with the idea because we're wanting to cut back on some things because we got a wedding coming up. We're going to rotate who pays for some of the things that we share. So one of us will pay for it for a year, and the next one will pay for it for a year, and the next one. So that one person's not always doing it. We're working together on it. So it's not just cutting them off because we have some things we share. And I want to keep those things for me. So that's the other thing, is how much of your life is being impacted by the need to keep covering for him and letting him know that you're going to start to separate some things and that you believe in him and well, that he can. But if you don't have to fly, you won't.
Yeah. Yeah,
here's the thing.
And that's what I've, well, that's what I've done, is he is self-sufficient in what he does. It's when he comes up and says, look, I need to get this work done, or I need to get that work done, and you guys need to pay for this because you're the ones that made me this way.
Well, hold on
and
a second.
I looked at it and I said, look, you're, yeah.
So I said 5-year plan because I thought your son was a nice guy and he was just needing a little extra money here and hadn't quite found his wings. But then you described to me a very entitled, manipulative young man who has no respect for you whatsoever to say, I'm not going to pay that bill, even though you gave me the money to pay for it. I spent it, and then I say, you need to take care of it. That is not somebody that you honor with support. And so I think, first of all, you need to, if I were you, I would say, if you want any more support from me, you and I are going to meet with a counselor at this time, at this place, you be there. And that's where this counselor helps you to resolve whatever has gone on before that would lead him to say to you, after he's given you the money to pay the bill, and you tell him to get it paid, even though he used the money somewhere else, and he says, no, that's your bill, it's on your account. That needs to be dealt with. I think you've got to have that conversation with somebody else to help him see what he has done and help you see where you are and what the next steps forward are in your relationship. Because you're just being used, if that's what he's doing. He's
just using
you as if you were a stranger off the street who had money he was handing out.
Well, and he's punishing you. He's punishing you for his hurts, his childhood hurts. Somehow, this is all your fault. He turned out this way. And while parents have some hand in how their children turn out, the children also then start to make their own decisions, and he's choosing some things that you didn't put in him. And he's wanting you to pay for that.
I'm saying you need to get some light into the relationship from a third party, because I just can't even believe he would say that to you and expect you to ever give him another penny. And I wouldn't.
Right.
When he comes and says, I need this thing and I need you to pay for it, I would say, no, we're not past that medical bill or that dental bill that I gave you the money for. You spent the money. I talked to you about paying the bill, and you said, no, it's my bill. We got to get the resolution there before anything else comes your way. And you might say, then, you don't love me, care for me, but I got to tell you, I'm seeing that already.
Well, and I would let him know that you feel like you have done him a disservice. You have let him down because you've made it too cushy for him, and that's reflected in his attitude. And so I would also separate those medical bills from your name.
He's an adult.
Right.
You can't
like,
call
why
him
is it on your
appointment
account
for him? Yeah, you can't make an appointment for him. He's an adult. If you were to try to call the doctor's office and ask for information, you couldn't. So it should all be in his name at this point. But he may have put your credit card on file.
That's what we had to try and do. They just wouldn't separate it because it was a family account at the time. And I said, this is all his bill. Well, we can't do that until it has a zero balance.
Okay, so you tell him all that, and you ask him what he's going to do about it.
Yeah, I like not giving him any more money until he takes care of that bill.
That's your five-year plan right now.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So here's
one
other thought. So he's looking to get some therapy, which we had an agreement to go to counseling, and that got reneged on. We're supposed to, for me, helping out with some dental work, splitting the cost. I said, we're going to counseling, you and I. This is the leverage that I have, and I'm going to use it right now. And we went once, and then he canceled it from there. And I went, okay, I'm done. This isn't going to happen anymore. So there's some money sitting in an account from my parents that is designated for him.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at that and saying, you know what? Here's this money that's from your grandparents to use for the therapy that you need, because he says he can't afford it, can't pay for it. That's what he wants me to pay for. And I'm thinking, my thinking is, here's this money. It's your money. You use it wisely for the therapy, because this is now causing him to buy in to actually wanting to get better and getting the help that he needs, because he's actually paying for it. And if he, in fact, does that, then I can help that later on and come back and add money to that account if there's therapy that's actually happening.
But I wouldn't tell him that.
Yeah.
That's the question.
No, let him manage it from here. He's almost 30 years old.
28.
He's 28. Yeah, let him. Like you said, he's self-sufficient in the things he's self-sufficient in. Let him become self-sufficient in this. He's already has a kickoff with the money from the grandparent. Let him be the one responsible.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. And if it got to the place where he needed ongoing treatment and there wasn't enough money in the fund, you could certainly come back and negotiate that at that point. But let's plan thinking going forward. He's going to make a way. Therapy is going to be valuable to him. He's going to see the benefit of his recovery, and he's going to go out and find a way to make more money. He can lift Uber,
but
carts,
he'll have better feelings about himself, doing it himself.
Finding a way to make up the difference for himself. There are a lot of gig jobs out there that he could do to make a payment for his therapy for the week if he's run out of funds in his inheritance.
Go ahead.
I have that money in my name right now. I have that money in my name right now. And that's what I'm saying is, do I give that to him and say, here's this money, this is what you use it for. If you're really interested in getting better, you will use it for this. You blow through it for any other reason, and you have not a leg to stand on with me as far as asking for help again.
But he's already proven to you that he will use
that.
Other things, and so I wouldn't. He's not showing you that he's ready to be responsible for money that's coming his way. And one day he would thank you for not giving it to him at a point where he was blowing all his money on, in, you know, important things. Old concept called making amends. He needs to make amends with his dad. We'll be back after this.
We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question or a comment, call toll-free 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
We are back. I'm going to send a really great book to you, Steve, and it's a book by Richard Watt. It's called Entitled Mania, and it's all about these kids that feel so entitled that they can even insult us over their entitlement. And so I think you're going to like this book. We'll send it to you.
And it deals with money, too.
Oh, yes.
Right? And how we deal with entitled kids with money. Mm-hmm.
And it talks about some creative ways to give your kids some things to where they're not dependent on it. Just a simple example is some parents will give the child a lump sum for college only. Some will give them an annual little bonus so they can take the family on a nice vacation every year. Things like that versus feeling like they don't have to work and get everything that they need. But entitlement, it's a big problem. And Larry Sonnenberg, you're with us here, and let's talk about what you feel entitled to talk about sitting right there in front of us.
I was
waiting for
that one.
Yeah, I was wondering where that was coming to. Hey, we got Grief Workshop this Saturday online.
Yes.
And I just wanted to encourage, you know, you got about a day left. I mean, tomorrow morning, it's closed. So things that will be talked about in this workshop, there is so much to grief that we don't stop and think about, and that it's not linear. It's not just this formula, you will feel this when. But, if, you know, just stop and think, folks. Think about shock when something. And we're not just talking about grief over a death of a person.
No.
There's a lot of things that we grieve in life. So, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, let's talk about some ways you would know you might be stuck in some unresolved grief. You know, people that need to grieve, sometimes you see them overly active and staying busy so that they don't have to settle down and feel. Or there are things in your past you don't want anybody to mention. And you move on and say, hey, I don't want to talk about that. Now, that's a really great sign of unresolved grief. Or you're isolating from other people because you don't want to have to deal with the reality of you might lose another person. So you isolate, you don't get close to people. Here's another thing, not just overly active, but overly active in habits that are harmful. And so you want, what's driving this sex addiction? What's driving this drinking, these drugs, these things, this shopping could be it. And sleep problems, and then one more, you overreact to stuff. Over and over again, people say, well, where is this anger coming from? Or where is this depression coming from? You're overreacting, and you may not ever have put it together that there's something there that you've lost that hurts you deeply, and you've never, ever experienced grief from it. We're going to help you with that this week.
Or how about the OCD, obsessive compulsive behaviors?
Yeah.
Hoarding is another form of grief.
Yeah. It's a fear of loss, fear of losing something. Yeah. I might need it or,
And we've often heard about the grieving, all the different aspects of stages of grief. And I don't want to go through all of them, but, you know, there's denial, anger, bargaining, fear, all this stuff.
Ice cream, that's another
there you
stage.
Go.
That's, ice cream.
Yeah, I like that one. But what we want to end up with is hope. At the end of this workshop, that's going to be whatever stage you're at, the last stage of this grief process is going to be hope.
And if you don't have any, why? What took it? It could be that painful thing that happened that you just have never, ever talked to anybody about, and that's what we want to help you with. We've got great presenters, and we've got great counselors that are going to work with you on your specific problem.
Steve, the best part of the workshop, I think, will be when you talk about laughter. I've heard you talk about grief and how laughter helps in so many ways. And
it is part of healthy grieving. And whenever people are healthily grieving the loss of a loved one and there are humorous things mm-hmm. at the funeral, you say, okay, that's a healthy thing. That's not a disrespectful thing. But whenever you're dealing with something, for me, I'm always looking for the Lord, the lesson, and the laughter in it. Or some people would say, where's Jesus, where's the jewel, and where's the joke? But there has to be a way to find something to relieve mm-hmm. all this pain, and humor is one of the things that can take us there.
Well, I'm getting sad just talking about it, so I'm going to leave and you take a call.
Well, anyway, I think your point is that all of the support we have goes to us continuing to find some unmet needs in the Christian community, and this is a big one, and we want to help you do what needs to be done.
And don't forget, we have this matching gift. We've got $706,000 to cover by the end of May.
Right. And Larry doesn't want to lose it. He'll be in deep grief then.
That's right. I'll be looking to you.
Yeah.
Two things I want to say about that if you give a gift of any amount, I'll send you 100 Days to Freedom from Anger, and you can give a gift by texting the word MATCH to 28950. 28950. You text the word MATCH, 28950, comes up, and you put the amount in there, and then I send you 100 days of freedom from anger.
You can also call us at 800-NEW-LIFE, go online, make a gift. There's other ways. So
newlife.com, 1-800-NEW-LIFE. We'll take a break. We'll come right back for more of New Life Live. Glad you're with us here today on New Life Live. And if you need help for you or someone you love, that phone number is 1-800-NEW-LIFE. We'll be back after this.
I was really living a very anxiety-filled life. I turned on New Life, and the topic that day was about anxiety. And just by listening, I got relief.
You can help New Life stay on the air by joining Club New Life today. When you sign up to support us monthly through Club New Life, we'll send you the new member thank you gift of the Life Recovery Bible Personal Size, the one-year Life Recovery Prayer Devotional, the New Life Journal, a New Life Pen and Highlighter, and a New Life Zippered Tote to hold it all. Plus, there are ongoing benefits like access to the Club New Life video library, the monthly Club New Life CD or download, quarterly resources, free shipping on purchased resources, and discounts on workshops. Call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433. Support Club New Life, and together we can help hurting people find help and hope in life's hardest places. Call 1-800-639-5433 to join Club New Life today.
Glad you joined us for New Life Live. To be a part of the program, call 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
We're back. Steve Arterburn here. And we were talking about grief at the break, because there's just so, it's hard to cover everything mm-hmm. when we're talking about it. But Jackie, you were going to mention something here.
I was just thinking, as Larry was talking, that grief is one of the things that we don't think about, how many layers that there are to grief. It's not just the death of a person, but it's the loss of the traditions that you maybe had with that person, like the lifestyle. Mm-hmm. I had a cousin whose birthday was the same day as mine, and every year on my birthday he would call me and wish me happy birthday. When he passed, I my birthday comes and I don't get those calls anymore. Mm-hmm. I actually had two cousins who shared a birthday with me, one older and one younger, and both of them have passed. And so my birthday every year I remember them and miss mm-hmm. that call.
Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't know that. I'll start calling you on your birthday.
Yeah, January 7th, Steve. It's January 7th. All right. But there's so many things that we miss. If you were divorced, mm-hmm. that's a loss, but you've lost all those connections. And Jill, mm-hmm. you were talking about that.
Right, yeah. There are so many things. Like I was saying, the lifestyle, being a we instead of just a me, mm-hmm. it's very different. And it's different in how people treat you in society and the places you can go and be a part of. That all changes.
Absolutely.
So that is a huge loss. Yeah. So whether through divorce or death, too, going to being one person where you don't know where you fit then.
Right.
I want to go to Carrie here, but I got to tell you, I was at a church where the young married couple's Sunday school class, it was on the second floor, bright room, windows everywhere. You just smiled when you walked in. The divorced Sunday school class literally was in the basement by the boiler room. Now, you get a divorce and you go from the second story to the basement by the boiler. I mean, it was, it just, it was symbolic of all of that experience. And I tell you, it ought to be just the reverse. Because the more we're hurting, the more we need the hope and the light. All right, let's go to Carrie from Yuma, Arizona. Carrie, glad that you called us here, and how could we help today?
Hi. I was in a relationship, and I broke up with my boyfriend about 2 months ago.
Yeah.
And he has been threatening me for about 2 weeks. Now, and I don't know what to do.
What is the threat? What threat is he doing? What's he saying?
He's saying he's gonna kill me someday, or that he's not gonna have peace until like my body is like laying in front of him, like my corpse. Just really nasty things.
Well, don't you think he might be serious about that?
He could be, yes.
And would you also think that that would be worthy of a phone call to the police and get some insight into whether or not a restraining order might be appropriate?
Yes. I did call them, and I they came and talked to me and documented, but I didn't want to do a restraining order because I know it will just make him more mad.
Well, I understand that. I understand you would have that fear. Let's see what Jill and Jackie Mack have to say.
Carrie, does he have a history of violent behavior or threatening behavior, empty threats? Does he get mad easily? Like, how long were you with him? Sorry, multiple questions.
I was with him. We were together about a year and a half, but I've known him for quite a few years.
Okay.
He does have a history of violence, but not towards me. He's never touched me, but he would just, like, block me from leaving, stuff like that. But he's never really threatened me before until, like, recently.
Okay, so who or where was his violence directed previously?
He's been in a lot of fights, like, with men, and he does have a domestic violence from years ago when he was married, but he was just, like, holding her. I don't believe he actually, like, hit her, but he was holding her, and he wouldn't let her go. Mm-hmm. So that's all I really know of.
Well, you sure are giving him a lot of grace, and I would say maybe not the best idea, given that he has a history here, a real live history.
Yeah, and it's hard when we know someone because we want to think better of them, and they're not this way 24/7. It comes and goes. And so sometimes we're too close to look at it accurately. I'm glad that you did reach out and report what's happening. I think that's really important. But I think, Carrie, someone like this that gets in fights and has had this with an ex-wife, This is a person who gets triggered and is very reactive and reacts out of his hurt and probably earlier trauma. And so you never know. See, that's the thing. You never know. They can be good one moment, and then it's like lighting a match, and you're 0 to 100. And abandonment and rejection and those kinds of things can trigger that behavior. And so I think you need to seriously look at the situation you're in. I don't want you to be a sitting duck. And I don't know what's triggered this in the last 2 weeks. So are you having ongoing conversation with him? The relationship ended, but has it really ended?
Yes. And I was ignoring him. Like, I am done. And he's finally realizing that. And I was ignoring him. But then when I was getting scared, it's like, I knew better and I shouldn't answer, but I did because I wanted him to calm down.
You're not going to be able to calm him down. And you said you didn't go through with the restraining order because it would just make him more angry. He's angry and threatening to that he won't be satisfied until he's standing in front of your dead corpse. Like, think about the reality of that. You're protecting him from the restraining order. Does it feel that that's also protecting yourself? What's the meaning of the restraining order for you?
For me, the only thing I think it would be beneficial to me would be if I called 911 because he was here, they would know what was happening and they could arrest him.
Well, especially if there was a restraining order out, because then he would also be breaking that restraining order.
Right, but he's definitely not afraid of going to jail or anything. He's not afraid of dying. And I believe that there's mental issues behind it.
So you're afraid that if you get a restraining order, it will push him to do the thing he's threatening to do?
Yes.
Okay.
And is that something that you told the authorities?
Yes.
Okay.
Do you have a support system in your area? Family, friends?
Yes. I'm staying with my mom, and I just told her a couple days ago, and I told my family, all of them, and but he knows where we live.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in therapy, and I told them, and I told my doctor, I told people.
Okay.
So you've told a lot of people that he's threatening you. In the event that something happens, people will know to look for him.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
here's the thing. I always tell folks that if someone is in danger and they call you, to not just end the conversation, but to be sure that they fully see the danger and they're taking the appropriate action. So I want you to hold on, because I want to be sure you really see the full extent of the danger, and I want to see if we could motivate you to protect yourself here. A person with his history that has, up until now, not hit you or something, that's not a good predictor of the future, especially if he's kind of getting more isolated and unhealthy as it gets. So hold on, I want to talk to you a little bit more here. You're listening to New Life Live, and I hope and pray something that we say might be helpful to you. We'll be back right after this.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live. This is Terry McIntosh, and May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and I want to remind you that taking care of your mental health is as important as eating healthy, exercising, or even saving for the future. To help you manage your mental health and to better understand those with struggles, we're featuring a sale on a variety of books, CDs, and devotions all month long. Visit our online store at newlife.com to shop the sale.
All right. Mental health. And what a tragic thing when you end up in a relationship, it ends, and you discover just how unhealthy the person is or was. Yeah. So, Jackie Mac, Jill, you guys, what do you think she needs to do to protect herself?
Well, did you want to
go ahead?
Well, Carrie, I'm wondering too, who you said you've known him for a while before you dated him. So I'm wondering who else is in his life that could also step in. And if he's got some mental health issues, maybe someone besides you. And I get that there's this balancing act. You're not wanting to enrage him. I was saying it's like, you know, pet the lion so he doesn't bite your head off, right? But it's very difficult for you alone to manage this. You're doing a lot of the right things by letting a lot of people know. I'm hoping that with your therapist, you guys are working on a plan for your safety. But if I think you could get other people to engage with him, that might help in some of him being triggered, right? And he could, you know, if he could get in and get some help and talk about his pain and deal with some of these issues, that would be the best case scenario for him and for you, even though I would never recommend dating him again. But then you might have to, for a period of time, kind of have a place where you can't be reached, like a domestic violence shelter. That sometimes women need to go to in order to stay safe, somewhere where he wouldn't know where you are.
Have you looked into domestic violence services in your area?
Yes. I did call them and they gave me a little bit of information. The reason I haven't done that is I would be worried about my family because I don't know if he would hurt my family also, like, because he has kind of, like, mentioned that, too, along with me. Like, he would, you know, I would be last. Like, if my family was here, I would be last. I'd have to watch him hurt them, you know, that kind of thing. So, it's like, I would feel like I was just abandoning them.
Well, and this is, I mean, your family could also do the restraining order if there's been threats. Yeah. They could do that. Right? Because he's made direct threats now towards your family. And your family consists of, did you said you were living with your mom, so your parents?
Right. My mom and stepdad, yeah. And then I have two adult children.
Okay.
That don't live with me, but he knows where they live also.
Well, and this is someone who is making homicidal threats. It is a threat and a danger. I think this needs to be stepped up a bit.
Yeah, the question, what do I do? I think our response to that is get a restraining order.
Right.
You've already made those calls and aren't comfortable with getting a restraining order, which just kind of leaves you sitting and hoping nothing bad happens.
Yeah, exactly.
There's nothing you can do about him.
Because, see, that enables the courts and the authorities then to take it to the next level.
It sounds like your concern is that when he's notified of the restraining order, that'll be the trigger.
And that's where maybe for that period of time, everybody is gone.
Right.
Right? I mean, I would ask the authorities, how do we protect ourselves?
Mm-hmm.
I imagine he will be violent when he finds this out.
Yeah.
What do we do? What can they offer you in protection?
All right. I want to send you a copy of the book, Take Your Life Back, and I hope that that's going to be of value to you. It has been to a lot of folks in these kinds of situations. I'll get that there. And let us try to find a counselor for you. We've got the grieving workshop coming up. I hope and pray that, you know, someone like this guy, if he could and be a milder situation. But if he could grieve his loss of the relationship, now he's not going crazy and threatening and full of rage. And to a lesser extent, you might be in some kind of loss situation. We can help you with that, the grieving workshop. It's going to be a good one. Now, we mentioned that May is Mental Health Awareness Month. We've got a lot of things that are on special out of our warehouse to try to help you. And when you give a gift of any amount, we send you 100 Days to Freedom from Anger. And if you have an angry person in your life, it destroys life. It makes life miserable. You never know when they're going to erupt. This could be a great study for you, and certainly maybe you'd find a way to for them to have this. It will really, really help. And today is the National Day of Prayer. And there are a lot of things that we want to have happen, but for them to happen, we need God's intervention. We need God to step in a supernatural way. And if that's where you are, God's open 24 hours a day and wants us to kneel and pray, or pray wherever we are, kneeling or not. It's a great day to get in touch with God. You know, every one of the situations that we've heard today, the desperation, entitlement, different things like that, you know, if we could just simply follow the moral laws that God has for us, we wouldn't get in trouble if everybody would do that. Well, too bad, because we live in a fallen world. Sometimes it feels like no one is doing that. But here's what God says. He says, you know, here's the bottom line is you got to love people. And when we judge people, criticize people, shame people versus love people, we make the problem worse. And so I just call on you to ask God to make you a better lover of people. And so many folks think they've got the right side of an argument, and in anger and bitterness, they throw it out there. What a great day, a day of prayer, to ask God to help you observe this most important. He says the most important thing is to love God, and then number two, but it's equal, is love your neighbor as yourself. And if you're not doing loving things, ask God to help you do that. Jill, Jackie, anything you want to close out with here today?
I just love that idea of asking God to help us be better lovers of people. Mm-hmm. Right? There's just so much hurt in the world, and my husband often says, hurt people hurt people.
Right.
And so just keeping that in mind, the forefront of your mind, people are hurting, and so sometimes we're going to have to love them through that.
Which might mean we have to give them a little grace.
It might mean we need to give them a little grace, and sometimes we need to give them a little space.
Mm-hmm. But that's not Carrie's situation. We're not wanting her to give him more grace, right? That's where boundaries are the loving thing to do.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah.
In fact, grace in that situation would be an excuse to not do what needs to be done.
Right.
For people to be protected. Hey, we love you. If you need some help, 1-800-NEW-LIFE. If you can help us, same thing. Send you 100 Days of Freedom from Anger. Thank you, Dr. Jackie.
Thanks for listening.
Dr. Jill.
We hope this program has helped you by giving you insights for handling the challenges you face in your life. We want you to know that we're here for you, but you also need to know that New Life Live is a listener-supported ministry. To make your donation or to get any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433, or write to us at New Life Ministries, P.O. Box 1029, Lake Forest, California, 92609. Please join us again tomorrow for New Life Live. Today's podcast can be downloaded through iTunes or streamed through your mobile device using the New Life app. Visit newlife.com to download the app today.